Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Wednesday edition of the show. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. This is, of course, the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. We talk to folks who are in the know or making things happen in Michigan's great Southwest or around our entire state. And coming up on today's program, we have multiple guests. First of all, we'll hear from Abdul El-Sayed. He is a candidate for governor here in Michigan. He spoke in Benton Harbor last night at a town hall. I was there. I caught up with him for a minute or two. After the meeting, we'll hear what he had to tell me about his candidacy for governor. He's a Democrat, a progressive Democrat. He is the Bernie Sanders to Gretchen Whitmer's Hillary Clinton. And we'll hear from him a bit about what his priorities are should he get the Democratic nomination for governor here in Michigan. We'll also talk with Brian Patelko. He is an economist at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research over in Kalamazoo. They recently released a report examining the West Michigan economy as it stands right now, comparing it to where it was during the Great Recession. We'll find out from him, from Brian, about how the economy has improved or maybe not improved in some respects. We'll talk with Berrien County Treasurer Brett Witkowski. I recently had a chance to catch up with him about foreclosures and some entities in Berrien County who are behind on their taxes. Property taxes will be due in April. The deadline is approaching. We'll talk to the treasurer about that. And also on today's program, we'll chat with St. Joseph Today about the annual wine festival in St. Joe. They recently announced some changes to the wine fest for this year that they're implementing. We'll learn about that from St. Joe Today's Amy Zapel. And if you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around and we'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Wednesday edition of the program. Right now, I thought I would tell you about an event that took place in Benton Harbor last night. Abdul El-Sayed, a candidate for governor here in Michigan, a Democrat, he held a town hall in Benton Harbor. It was at the public library. I was there. He talked about multiple things. He laid out his agenda, which is very progressive, I should say. He very much touted the fact that he does not take corporate contributions, et cetera, saying he's the people's candidate for governor. So I caught up with him after the meeting to chat briefly. I had a couple of minutes with him. So let's hear what Abdul El-Sayed, candidate for governor, had to tell me.
Now, you had a lot to say tonight. If you had to outline some of your biggest priorities if you become governor, what would you tell us?
Listen, we need a progressive vision for Michigan. That means standing up, doing the work of passing single-payer health care, standing up and making sure that any person can earn a living wage working 40 hours on $15 a minimum. That means that we're willing to stand up for our water and shut down Line 5. That means that we're willing to stand up and protect folks in schools by banning guns from being in schools in the first place. And in particular, banning the kinds of weapons that were meant for a theater of war on our safe, peaceful streets. It means that we're willing to stand up and do things like invest in universal family care, invest in paid family leave, making sure that women in this community have the means of being able to have opportunities to earn exactly on par with what men earn, if not more, because we are not taxing them and faulting them for having children, right? We've got to stand up and make sure that this is a place where everybody and anybody feels safe, secure, welcome, and is not going to be discriminated against. In particular, we've got to amend Elliot Larson and make sure that we're standing with our LGBTQ plus communities. So these are the issues that we outlined. It's about a progressive vision for Michigan. I believe in a Michigan that is more just, more equitable, and more sustainable. And as a doctor, I know that the responsibility of government is service first, and that if we're willing to stand together, come together, demand an end to that kind of corporate bought-out politics, because we're not taking any corporate money, that it's possible.
So what separates you from, say, Gretchen Whitmer?
I think everything I just said. I mean, where do you want me to start, right? I actually have objective leadership experience in a bureaucracy. I've led an agency of government. I'm not taking corporate money, so they're not going to be able to walk into my office when I'm governor and tell me what to do. I believe in single-payer health care because I believe that we can get it done. As a doctor, I don't want anybody in this state having to make a decision between getting the care they need when they get sick or putting their family's financial future at risk. We've been able to inspire a movement. We just submitted 24,000 signatures, all collected by volunteers, because we've got 2,800, including our 300 interns, who are out knocking doors. We've knocked on 100,000 doors already. This is about a people-powered movement, not a corporate-powered movement. And so that's the big difference.
And so is that what it's going to take for you to, you know, be able to get through this primary and even into the governor's office, the power of people?
Look, that's in a government for people and by people, that's the only thing that's supposed to have power, right? The fact that we've allowed corporations to take any power, right, and that Democrats are playing into that ballgame, that to me is ridiculous. It's a corruption of our values, and we can't stand for it.
And, you know, what made you want to jump into this race in the first place? I mean, what made you decide to take the plunge?
Yeah, look, I was rebuilding Detroit's health department. I was watching as the Flint water crisis was unfolding. Our state governor was poisoning 9,000 kids in a city that looked a lot like the city I was serving. And then watching as an individual who shouldn't be allowed to lead a car, let alone lead our country, was being elected president. And I had to think back to the advice that I got when I graduated college from the University of Michigan, where I was valedictorian, and Bill Clinton was the main commencement speaker. And he asked me, you know, if I'd ever considered running for office. At that point, I, you know, hadn't, because I just thought that was off limits to me as somebody of my faith and my ethnic origin. But then I thought about that 10 years later, realized the responsibility to serve, and that we had an opportunity to rethink government if we were willing to make politics look different. And the politics that we have right now, nobody's happy with. So it's time for us to inspire a change, and that's what we're doing through this movement.
And you think you can overcome that divisive politics we've got right now?
Look, Michigan is full of great people, and great people make decisions with their heart and their mind. And, you know, I know that the people of Michigan are way bigger than a lot of people give them credit for. And so my sense is when you sit down with folks, you have a real conversation about what hurts, you're willing to listen and learn from them, you're willing to reflect back and build a plan like doctors do, that it can be done, and it will.
I don't want to take up more of your time. Anything else you want to tell us?
Look, this is an opportunity right now to rethink politics, to take it back for people, by people, to where it was supposed to be. We don't take corporate money because that's what corrupts our politics. We stand on values. We don't apologize for who we are because we know that demanding that people have access to health care, demanding that people get paid a fair wage for the work that they do, demanding that we protect our Great Lakes, 21% of the world's fresh water, that just makes sense. And so we stand with people, and people are standing with us. That's what it takes to move our politics into a future that really does dignify our state.
All right. That was Abdul El-Sayed talking last night following a town hall in Benton Harbor. He's running for governor as a Democrat. Republicans ought to love this guy. He seems to be the most progressive candidate for a governor right now, at least a Democrat. He spoke last night. Benton Harbor Mayor Marcus Muhammad was there. And he said, you know, the days of the presumed candidate are gone. And I think that was a reference to Gretchen Whitmer, who is sort of the front runner for the Democratic nomination for governor right now. Abdul El-Sayed last night telling me he is very different from Gretchen Whitmer. He is 33 years old. He's from Detroit, Michigan. He was educated at the University of Michigan, as well as Oriel College, Oxford, and Columbia. He was a Rhodes Scholar at one point. He led the Detroit Health Department for a few years there between 2015 and 17. And he last night he did talk about some of his accomplishments there, trying to rebuild that health department after it was sort of left decimated during Detroit's most recent darkest days. He very much touted the fact he doesn't take corporate contributions. He was signing up volunteers last night in Benton Harbor. He came to town after dropping off his nominating petitions at the Michigan Secretary of State's office yesterday. His campaign says he has enough to get on the Democratic primary ballot. He was also in Kalamazoo yesterday, and then it was back to Detroit for him. Speaking to a packed crowd, a packed house last night at the Benton Harbor Public Library. So I suspect that's not the last we'll hear of Abdul El-Sayed around here. And that was his visit to Benton Harbor yesterday. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now, I thought we would talk with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. They recently released a report that they put together on the state of the West Michigan economy now compared to where it was during the Great Recession. I talked with Upjohn Institute economist Brian Patelko about this. Let's hear what he had to tell me. All right, Brian, so you've issued a report on the state of the West Michigan economy now versus the Great Recession. What sort of time frames were you looking at here exactly?
Right. The Great Recession started in December of 2007, so right at the end of the year, and continued through May 2009. And we thought it would be sort of a nice 10-year retrospective and look at what's changed, what hasn't changed, how long it took things to recover from the Great Recession.
Okay, now I know that the Upjohn Institute always breaks down West Michigan into different, what you call market areas, Benton Harbor, basically Berrien County is one, and you look at Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, Battle Creek.
So it's a little more interesting when there's a multi-county one, especially, a brief aside, in other parts of the country where counties maybe aren't the best definition of a labor market.
All right, so if we look at the general West Michigan region here since the recession, has the economy fully recovered?
In general, the region has improved by a few percentage points. It took a long time to recover. Most metropolitan areas recovered only in the last couple of years, or in the case of the Niles-Benton Harbor area. It hadn't recovered fully by the end of 2016. I think just sort of nudged over the top earlier this year. But we just published full year data, so we didn't have all of 2017 yet.
Okay, so looking at Berrien County here, the Niles-Benton Harbor MSA, you were saying employment until very recently hadn't fully recovered, but we have a few strong areas as well in the economy?
Yeah, it looks like your leisure and hospitality sector, it looks like the Great Recession, and sometimes it hit every area, sometimes it hit different industries, in different ways. But in Niles-Benton Harbor, it kind of shifted the focus a little bit away from manufacturing. Manufacturing employment is down, but the hospitality sector, I think people finally realize you guys are a lovely place to visit, and so leisure and hospitality, so that's including retail, restaurants, hotels, is up by 27% in the last 10 years.
And I see it's growing in terms of the number of the percentage of the population that it employs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was below 10% back in 2007, and now it's nearly 13% of the area employment in 2016.
All right, so leisure, hospitality have been a positive for the Berrien County area. You mentioned the manufacturing's been down. Any other particularly weak sectors in the economy here?
The professional and business services sector is also down. I mean, some of the other ones that have declined by larger percentage points are smaller industries. But the professional and business service sector, which is both a mix of higher end jobs and temporary employment, and so sometimes we see that going up along with manufacturing because manufacturers use temp to hire. But in this area, it's down a little bit as well. So it seems like that might have been tied to the manufacturing fortunes of the area.
You did note the employment picture in the Berrien County, Benton Harbor, Niles, MSA. The recovery from the recession was a bit sluggish around here. What about elsewhere in West Michigan?
It recovered pretty well everywhere else in West Michigan, though to a lesser, sometimes just by, one percentage point or 1.9 in Battle Creek or like in Kalamazoo, it was somewhat more modest, 0.9%. So sometimes, while technically recovered, we won't call it an entirely robust recovery.
So looking back at the recession from 2007, roughly to 2009, the fact that we're still just recovering from that, what does that tell you? I mean, it points to how especially frightening that recession was.
Yeah, I mean, there was a reason we call it the Great Recession. It really damaged, and Michigan was already in decline in some ways, and so it really damaged the state in general. It caused a population loss and other things. The other interesting thing is, because it was sort of led by housing, it damaged home sale prices. We published that as well, and in a lot of areas it took, and not just Niles-Benton Harbor, but all around. A lot of areas didn't recover their housing sale price value until 2017. So 10 years. It took 10 years sometimes for home sale prices to be where they were.
We're talking to Brian Patelko with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. They recently released a report on the state of the economy in West Michigan right now versus during the recession. Any other highlights from this report that you'd like to tell us about?
Well, one of the other things we talk about, and then people ask about, unemployment beyond just the basic unemployment rate, and the fact that labor force participation which is the amount of employed and unemployed people divided by the total population 16 or over. Mm-hmm. And that's declined as well. In Niles, Benton Harbor, it went from 62% in 2017 down to 60%, which suggests sometimes people have left the labor force for various reasons. It's usually not always known whether or not they left the labor force because they couldn't find the job they wanted, or if they retired, or if they went back to school. But one of the things we tried was calling an age-adjusted labor force, which means holding the age profile constant to see what the labor force participation would be now. And it's a way of getting at whether or not the population is just simply aging. And when you do that, it shows that the labor force participation rate actually would have grown in the area had the population not aged the way they did, which suggests that some of the reason folks left the labor force in Niles, Benton Harbor isn't necessarily because they couldn't find a job or they couldn't find a job that paid what they wanted or gave the benefits they wanted or matched their skills. But sometimes, folks, as the area ages, you're just not going to see a high labor force participation rate.
Part of the reason for that around here is aging population?
Mm-hmm. An aging population. Whether that means because younger folks are leaving or not, I'm not certain of that either. But the age profile of the area suggests it's getting older a little bit and that it's pushing down the rate of people being in the labor force.
All right. That was Brian Patelko, economist with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, noting that our labor force participation in Berrien County has gone down the last decade or so. And I asked him, I did ask, what happens to those people who drop out of the labor market? Are they married? Do they have spouses who work? Can they retire? And that's actually the case. Most of them are near retirement age, Brian was telling me. So somebody who's maybe in his 60s looking at possible retirement during the recession, lost their job and decided just to retire a few years early. I know a few people who had to do that. So that partially explains the reduced workforce participation in Berrien County since the Great Recession. And, of course, Brian noting the region, as of last year, still hadn't completely recovered employment-wise. The leisure and hospitality market, of course, looking very good. That's seen the most growth. I've heard it remarked, you know, yeah, that's great that there's lots of jobs, but those are hotel jobs. Whatever happened to the good manufacturing jobs? That's a point to consider as well. But you take the growth where you can. From what Brian told me there, the thing that struck me the most was just how severe the recession was. I mean, I know it was, of course. I lived through it. But the region, as of late 2016, still had not completely recovered. Its employment rate is now about back where it was. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. We'll take a break right now. When we come back, we will talk with Berrien County Treasurer Brett Witkowski about foreclosures and the property tax deadline and the fact that there are some high-profile entities that have yet to pay their property taxes, namely the Orchards Mall, in danger of possible foreclosure this year. We'll learn about that next segment with Berrien County Treasurer Brett Witkowski. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Wednesday edition of the show. It's hump day. So what better topic to talk about on a Wednesday than taxes, specifically property taxes? I recently caught up with Berrien County Treasurer Brett Witkowski to find out about the looming property tax foreclosure date and the fact that there is at least one notable entity in Berrien County in danger of foreclosure. It's the Orchards Mall. The same thing happened last year, and they paid up at the last second. I suspect they'll do so again this year, but I chatted with the treasurer about that and about property taxes in general. Let's hear what he had to tell me. So we're talking to Berrien County Treasurer Brett Witkowski. Now, I think it was Saturday you published a big list of delinquent properties. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
So what are we looking at right now? First of all, for what tax year are we talking here?
These are for taxes 2015 and before. There aren't many before. Most people are pretty good about getting a payment plan or paying them off. And we're down about 3 or 4% from last year, which is a good sign for the county.
But that's only about 3 or 4%, you said?
Yeah, 3 or 4% less than last year at the same time.
Okay. And I know that once again the Orchards Mall has popped up on there?
Yeah, the Orchard Mall, which is obviously catching people's attention, is one that is potentially going down foreclosure land. Last year they came in the last day and paid, and they have that right to to do that again. This will be the one property that I don't offer a payment plan to because of how they're maintaining the facility or lack of the parking lot, not paying water bills, things of that nature. So if they pay the entire bill, then from a tax standpoint, they'll continue to own the property, which is their right.
I know you typically want everyone to get into a payment plan, but this one, it seems like, well, I mean, you just said they're the only one that you wouldn't offer a plan to.
Yeah, and it's not because we want to hurt those businesses, because if we do have to foreclose on it, then we will work with all those businesses out there to help them strive, or, you know, grow forward and get better. But, you know, the stress that, you know, if you drive out in the parking lot, if you look how things are maintained, I'm not sure, and their inability to pay other bills on time doesn't give me any confidence that a payment plan is going to make things better for those businesses and for Benton Township and for the county. So, you know, if they pay the entire thing, which they have that right legally, then they'll continue to own it under the current standards.
So when do they have to pay the taxes by?
This year, the foreclosure date is April 2nd. March 31st falls on a Saturday, so by law, it kicks over to the next business day, which would be Monday, April 2nd.
And if this property is foreclosed, it would not be auctioned like most other foreclosed properties.
You know, this one would probably go through the land bank. The land bank, before things go to public auction, the local unit has the right to buy property for public purpose. The Bering County Board and Administration have the right to buy stuff for public purpose. And then a land bank can acquire for any purpose. The land bank traditionally does not buy anything before auction because it has to pay a full purchase price. But this might be the one situation where I would ask the land bank to consider buying it before and then solicit bids. And, you know, the goal would be to get it sold as quick as possible into somebody who can, what I think would have to redevelop that site. But the land bank does not buy stuff before first auction. First auction would be July 31st. But if we do have to foreclose on it, we will, through the treasurer's office, operate the mall and keep it open for those businesses so they can, you know, and so we'll do everything we can to keep it open, to pay the bills, make it respectable, and then find a qualified buyer who has the ability, both from a strategic standpoint and a financial standpoint, to do something with that property out there.
Okay. Speaking of a couple of high-profile ones that were in the land bank, we recently talked about El Rico and Mercy Hospital. Did anything end
That's
up happening
correct.
With those?
Mercy Hospital did not solicit any bids. El Rico did solicit three bids. The land bank reviewed those last Tuesday. Two of them were deemed, let's say, qualified, but the use is not what they want to use the property for. Is not an approved use by the city of Benton Harbor. It is zoned a heavy industrial. So we have given each company 60 days to have approval or not approval, either way, from Benton Harbor City Commission. If the city does not want to approve it, which is their right, we will not sell it. We will not force this down the city's throats under any circumstances. If the city does approve it, then the land bank will sell it to one of the two bidders.
Okay, so can you tell us what these proposed uses are for the El Rico property?
Yeah. The use is medical marijuana growing facility, I believe, where they actually, or farm, however the correct wording for it. But, so, you know, I know it's been talked about city commission meetings, but it is not approved use, so we are not going to sell something that's not approved by any city or township or village. And so we'll just, you know, they have a right to go in front of the city and ask for it, and we'll just react to how the city does it, and we're fine either way. It is city property, and the city has a right to control what they want in their city.
Right, and I mean, you know, if the city hasn't even approved medical marijuana facilities yet, it would be kind of pointless
correct.
To allow such a sale.
If we sell it before a city would approve it, then it's kind of like we're forcing down the city's throats, and that's not how we operate. We want the city's involvement. We put in the bids. You have to have the city approval. You have to have the city agree to what you want to use it for, because this is an important part of the city from a development standpoint, a taxable standpoint, and we're not going to sell anything, regardless of the offer price, unless it is approved. The only way we would sell something without city approval is if it's the use fits the current zoning, which would be heavy industrial. You know, then doesn't need city approval. You know, that's just like any community. And so our board is on the same page, and we feel very strongly about that. And I have communicated that to the mayor and to the manager. And, you know, I know they appreciate getting a heads up that these two developers could become the city commission and going through the planning board, et cetera.
Okay, we've been talking with Berrien County Treasurer Brett Witkowski, first of all, about the Orchards Mall, once again winding up on that delinquent properties list. And then the Berrien County Land Bank has received three bids for the El Rico property, industrial property in Benton Harbor. And Brett, you were telling me, so two of them are medical marijuana facilities. What about the third one?
The third one really didn't say what they wanted to use it for, and they didn't meet the criteria to prove the, you know, we asked for a financial ability to prove it, and they did, two of the three, what their plan was for it, to be up front, and two of the three did. And, you know, the one that didn't provide that information. So, you know, we don't want to sell to speculators and sit on it for 3 or 4 years again. We're just back in the same boat we were before.
All right, that was Berrien County Treasurer Brett Witkowski. Couple of issues to talk about there. First of all, he told us his office will not offer a payment plan on delinquent property taxes to the Orchards Mall. He doesn't think that would be productive, so they have to pay up their property taxes by April 3rd. Otherwise, it's foreclosure. Now, they were in the same exact boat last year, and they ended up paying up at the last minute, so I sort of suspect that's what will happen this time, but you never know. And also, he noted the vacant El Rico property, what's known as the El Rico property, has received a couple of bids. The land bank got a couple of bids for that property. Land bank will not sell it to anyone unless the proposed use for the property conforms to Benton Harbor's zoning. So the two serious bidders were proposed medical marijuana facilities for that property. And because in Benton Harbor they haven't really ironed out the medical marijuana rules just yet, the land bank has not taken any action on selling that property to anyone. We'll see what comes out of the city commission on that front. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, this is Our Take. Right now it's time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk with St. Joe Today's Amy Zapel to learn about some changes they're making to a wine festival that they hold in St. Joe each year. These changes announced recently. If you'd like to weigh in on something we discussed, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Wednesday edition of the program. Thanks for tuning in. I am your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be here. And, of course, this is the show where we have longer conversations with individuals who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's Great Southwest. We talk about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. So far in today's program, we heard from Democratic candidate for governor Abdul El-Sayed. He is a progressive Democrat. He spoke in Benton Harbor last night. I had a couple of minutes to talk with him. He has a wide-ranging platform agenda that includes things like single-payer health care, protecting LGBT individuals, eliminating the wage gap between men and women, shutting down Enbridge's Line 5 in the Straits of Mackinac. He also said last night he thinks there should be a state law preventing municipalities from cooperating with ICE on immigration issues. So he's on the left side of the spectrum there, running for a governor. And he attracted quite a crowd in Benton Harbor last night at the library. I don't think we've heard the last of Abdul El-Sayed. And so we talked with him on today's show. We also heard from Brian Patelko of the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. He told us about a report the Upjohn Institute recently released that examined the West Michigan economy right now versus during the Great Recession. Only recently did the Berrien County area employment-wise, fully recover, although workforce participation has gone down. We also talked to Berrien County Treasurer Brett Witkowski about the Orchards Mall and the El Rico property in Benton Harbor and the looming deadline for property taxes to be paid. So we appreciate his time. Right now, I thought we'd close out today's edition of Our Take by talking about a fall event in St. Joseph. This isn't coming up until September, but recently the St. Joe City Commission approved some changes for a wine festival in St. Joe. The wine festival is organized by St. Joe Today. I caught up with St. Joe Today's Amy Zapel to learn what they're doing differently this year for the wine festival in St. Joseph. Let's hear what she had to tell me. All right, Amy, so city commissioners have given St. Joseph Today permission to change up the September wine festival a little bit. Tell us exactly what is St. Joe Today going to do differently this year with the wine fest?
So the event will is really a hybrid of our barbecue blues and bluegrass and our winter beer fest. So it'll feature microbreweries. There'll be wine and cider available, and there'll be some really great music. So it's a shorter version of barbecue in that it's only from 4 to 8, so it's a four-hour event, $35 tickets. Mm-hmm. You'll see some really great regional music, roots music, folk Americana, that sort of stuff, and it'll be just a really great way to cap out September.
All right, the event, what was it previously known as?
It was the St. Joe Wine Fest. And it will now be Roots and Brews.
Roots and Brews. I like that. So was the old Wine Fest just not catching on?
You know, we had done it for a number of years, and we feel this is the best, just a better option for us. A lot of our wineries at that time of year are harvesting, as you can imagine. So it makes it difficult for them. So this is just a different way for us to celebrate the end of summer and have some really great music and some great food and drink as well.
Okay, so we'll still have wine. There will be food. There will be live music at Roots and Brews slated for September. This new event, this hybrid event, will, and there's going to be a change of venue.
Yep. So it was, it has been in Whirlpool Centennial Field, but it will be now up in the same space as the Winter Beer Fest, which are the lots on Lake Boulevard between Broad Street and Pleasant Street.
That's right behind Jimmy John's, right?
Yep, exactly. And Winter Beer Fest is just on the parking lots. This will also include that the Monty's lot there, the grassy part that borders Pleasant Street.
You know, I like the fact that they have that open lot there downtown.
Me too. It's great, isn't it? It's a good event space. I like the grassy area. I love green space.
All right, so this new event, it'll be in September, the new Roots and Brews Fest, sort of evolution of the Wine Fest. Now, will this be similar to the Winter Beer Fest in that, you know, you'll have to get tickets in advance and there's a limited number just because of the venue?
Yep, so tickets will be available in advance. They'll be able to buy them at the Welcome Center or online through the Mendel Center.
And, of course, having this event above the Bluff could get more people downtown.
Yep. So one of the great things about that space is that it's so strongly connected right to our downtown. So Whirlpool Centennial Field was great because it was bigger, but the Wine Fest also was kind of a smaller event and didn't fill that space out. So we feel this will be the strongest possible showing of a great event that really features our downtown and connects those attendees, whether they be locals or visitors, to our downtown area, our downtown merchants.
All right. Why is it called the Roots and Brews Fest?
Because we're going to feature some great roots music and some really great local brews.
Great.
So some great breweries and just all the things that those businesses are doing for our area and promoting their great products.
All right, we've been talking with Amy Zapel of St. Joe Today about the evolution of the old Wine Fest. It's now the Roots and Brews Fest. It'll be going on in September, so you've got a while to prepare. Anything else you'd like to tell us about the event, Amy?
I'd love to add that we look forward to, again, celebrating the end of summer with our community and the attendees in a very festive fashion with great music, great beer, some great local food, and featuring our beautiful downtown and showing that off as best we can.
Great. That's St. Joe Today's Amy Zapel telling us about how they're going to change up the Fall Wine Festival this year just to get more people downtown. You know, it used to be held at Whirlpool Centennial Park, but that's kind of a big space. So they're moving it up above the Bluff, sort of where the Winter Beer Fest is. This is going on in September, so you got plenty of time to plan for this, but should be a hot ticket when September rolls around. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, one last thing to tell you about in today's edition of Our Take, and this is flood-related. Yesterday, the Berrien County Sheriff's Department gave its latest update on the flood recovery efforts going on around Niles in particular, as well as Berrien Springs. And there is a new organization that's jumped into the mix to help out people affected by flooding. This is Team Rubicon. It is a organization made up of veterans. It's a veteran-led disaster response organization. It was founded in 2010 following the earthquake in Haiti. It was founded by veterans Jake Wood and William McNulty, both of the Marine Corps. They started Team Rubicon, and if you look at their website, you can see how they show up to different areas affected by disasters and help people clean up. And who would be better at helping with that than veterans? So Team Rubicon now is helping out in Berrien County following our flooding, and you can make a contribution to them if you would like to assist them in their mission. It's TeamRubiconUSA.org is the website, and they joined the Sheriff's Department yesterday as they gave an update on the flood recovery. You know, the efforts continue. And this is just another way that you can help out. Go to TeamRubiconUSA.org. They help out people dealing with damage to their property. It's conducting damage assessments, muck-out operations, and debris removal for free for people affected by flooding. The latest organization to jump into the mix. If you do need help, call 211. That's how you can get connected with various services that could assist you if your property was damaged by the flood. This is TeamRubiconUSA.org. And, of course, don't forget about the United Way of Southwest Michigan's ongoing relief effort. That's UWSM.org/relief. Last I heard, they had raised more than $20,000. I'm sure it's gone up since then. So that's the other big way, United Way and Team Rubicon now in the mix. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for today's edition of Our Take. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we will talk with Rocky Adams of the Berrien County Emergency Management Office. We'll talk with him about school safety and what the county does to help schools be ready for potentially dangerous situations. We'll talk with the Van Buren County Conservation District's Eleanor Siraki tomorrow to learn about invasive species and what you can do to help prevent the spread of them. We're talking invasive bugs. We're talking invasive plants. The time of year is approaching where we will start to see these things spreading around. So we'll learn about that on tomorrow's Our Take. And if you'd like to weigh in on something we discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This has been Our Take. You have a fantastic rest of your day.